Good morning and welcome to Jump In Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour and I am Ted Maxwell. I've got Matt Neely on his Monday this week working behind the glass, but I know he will keep me on time and target. He's worked out all his Monday morning kinks with Christy Simone this morning on Wake Up Tucson. So we are ready to go. The Engagement Hour, why do we have it? And what do we like to talk about? We like to talk about the responsibilities of all of us as citizens of this great country to be involved, to get engaged. There's a lot of different ways to do it. You can do it. We all do it with our primary responsibility, which we've been talking about for the last couple months, and that's voting and to be an engaged voter. There's those who serve, so serve in the military, serve as first responders, serve as educators. And then there's those who help their communities, those who lead nonprofit organizations. You could lead your homeowners associations. You can just be involved in some way, giving some of your time. Time, talent, treasure are three things we've all got, and we all give different areas of that, and time is perhaps the most important one. And that's why I'm really honored to have some folks who have stepped up and are giving back to their community and to a community they're very passionate about. And today with me on the line, I've got Michael and Bonnie Quinn, the founders and truly the force that's behind the Rocking for Harry's program. Michael, Bonnie, how do you hear me?
Good morning. We hear you great, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
Hey, appreciate it. I'm doing great today. Appreciate having you both on. We've got the first segment to talk about, and I kind of want to jump right in. For those who don't know, the purpose of Rocking for Heroes is they honor and support first responders, active military, veterans, and Gold Star families. And that's the reason for the four, because you're going to hear about the number four a lot as we tell you where you need to go, what you need to search. But real quick, Michael and Bonnie, if you could just share a little bit about your story of how you gotten started in this.
Okay, great. So this is a really personal mission for us. It's become much bigger than our own personal mission, but this was came from our desire to thank the first responder community for their care of our son, who we lost to cancer in 2020. And it was heavy on our hearts to say thank you to them. At the same time, Michael's a Navy veteran, and we've always been supporters of our military and our veteran community and also our Gold Star community. So we decided we had to go big and go public with how we thank these four hero groups. And Rockin' for Heroes started to evolve as a way to do that, and we came along with some great people came along to join us and make it happen, like Steve Rakowski, our executive producer, and Mary Murphy and Dana Cooper, lots of people with their talents and passion that helped us launch this and take it to where it is this year, which is our fourth annual event. Going to be big this year, Ted.
It is going to be big, and it's really incredible that with the loss of your son, PJ, you've turned this into something as a way of honoring him and honoring all those who supported him through his battle, and you've stretched it to all those who you respect and care about, and you've put together an incredible team, so I want to compliment you on that. I know there's two ways that you do it throughout the year. One's through your Hero Fund, which goes on throughout the year, your collections, your giving, and providing support to those ones. But the one we're talking about today really is the Rocking for Heroes concert. So it's going to be Sunday, December 10th at the
November 10th.
Sunday, November 10th at the James D. Creek Park in Oro Valley, both of our hometown. We all three of us, for full disclosure, live up there. But it's really been something that you've grown. Can you give us a little background of why you decided to do a rock concert as a part of a background for the other activities you have during that day, honoring those who serve?
Well, Ted, many of us, I'm sure, like you, we enjoyed music as a young person and attended concerts here and there. And then we grew up and became responsible and raised families and kind of put that aside. And yet you hear music out of, in the weekends or something. And so we were revisiting that love as, middle-aged adults, if you will. And we wanted to bring people together. The important thing was to bring people together to honor our heroes. And that is the genesis. While the music is there, it's secondary, and it's fantastic music. As you know, we bring some incredible out-of-state talent in. We have a local group that's opening.
Mark Miller Country.
Mark Miller Country Western. And then we'll move to Lexington Lab. But you know, our desire to thank those who served our son, that serve our community, state, and country, we found along the way that others wanted to come alongside and give thanks to. Your opening today said it well, and I think this is a perfect opportunity for the public to come forward and companies and businesses that support us through sponsorships and donations to support their heroes, support our community's heroes. This is a public demonstration of that commitment.
Yes, very much so. And the first year we had our concert, we were coming out of COVID, and people needed to be unified. They needed to come together socially and publicly again. And so it's ironic, this year is not much different than that. You know, with there's a lot of division right now, and there's one thing we can all agree on. I think everybody loves music, and everybody is served by these hero groups. So this is a very unifying year this year, we believe, and music is a big piece of that for sure. And that's why we do the concert.
Absolutely. It makes the event that much more special. If you want any information on the organization or on the details, it's Rocking, R-O-C-K-I-N, the number 4, and then Heroes, HEROES.org. You can go and get a lot of good information about their doing it. So Bonnie, you mentioned this is year 3, and you really do a incredible job of honoring veterans. And this year you've got several veterans and first responders that you're honoring. Can you talk just a little bit about the opportunity for people to show up and demonstrate the support for those who have served?
I think, Ted, we had last year, we honored 2 World War II veterans, as you remember. You're a big part of our event and helped us honor those 2 World War II veterans. And this year we're moving to, you know, a Korean Vietnam veterans. We have a veteran who served both in Korea and Vietnam, and then another veteran who received 2 Purple Hearts in Vietnam. Came back very injured and pushed back through that, and has served the veteran community for about 35 years. 2 amazing individuals. We're going to honor all our veterans and ask everyone to support and give applause to all our veterans at the opening ceremony.
We're also fortunate to have another World War II veteran coming this year, Don Sloan, who owns Miller Surplus downtown. We're really looking forward to having him there. And we're also going to be honoring Chief Tom Brandhuber with Golder Ranch with our Community Hero Award. He's done amazing things for that department and in his career in general.
It's
a huge service. Yes. Yes.
Well, that's one thing I appreciated about your enthusiasm, your passion, and how far you've jumped in. I know you've got big visions going forward. Right now it's focused on making this the best event that's held in Oro Valley every year. And I appreciate you taking the time to be with me this morning. I'm looking forward to it. Lexington Labs is an amazing group. If you go to that website, again, rockingforheroes.org, you can listen to a little of their music. They are an all-around cover band that covers a lot of different groups that I think everybody would find fascinating. And I want to give you one last opportunity before we have to go to a break to any last words you want to make sure people know about the event and how they can support you.
Absolutely. That's great. Thanks, Ted. Yes, this is a free public event, and we do fundraise to support our heroes and pay for this event, but there is no charge to come. We don't want any barriers of entry. It's important that as many people have access to this event and come out and see what this mission is about. And it's such an uplifting day. We can't recommend it enough. There's food trucks, there's a beer tent, all the heroes are present in their booths. It's just an amazing day overall. You don't want to miss it. We also have a kids zone, and we have Smooch the Donkey will be there this year for photo ops from track.
I heard Smooch was making an appearance. He's got quite a following, there's no doubt.
His reputation definitely precedes us, but no doubt about it. He's going to be a big draw for the kids.
Well, Bonnie, Mike, all I want to close with is to say thank you. Thank you for all you do, the hard work you put into this. I know it's a passion. I know it's to honor your son and all others who have given and served and gone through, you know, very, very difficult times. But it is truly an event that is growing, and I think will continue to grow under your passion and leadership. And thank you for joining me today. And I'll see you
Great.
On the
Thank team. You.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bring a chair. We'll see you there.
I will see you there. That sounds good. Thank you both again. Once again, you're listening to Jump in Tucson on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. And we will be back after the break with Katie Ratliff from the Common Sense Institute.
And this is Lexington Lab Band doing a little Tom Petty cover.
Nice combination of what the request was today. That's perfect. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's weaving our way through a little Tom Petty with maybe a little Lexington Labs thrown in every so often. That's the band you'll get to hear if you go up to Rockin' for Heroes concert in Oro Valley on Sunday, November 10th. So with me now, I'm honored to have Katie Ratliff, who is the Common Sense Institute's executive director. You're going to learn a lot more about the Common Sense Institute, a data-driven, fact-based organization that really, to say they do a lot of research is probably an understatement. Katie serves as the Common Sense Institute's Arizona's primary spokesperson, and she works with the CEO, board, and other partners to ensure that the mission is fulfilled through programs, strategic planning, and community outreach. Prior to becoming the executive director for the Common Sense Institute, Katie served in Governor Doug Ducey's administration for 6 years. She served as the Director of Legislative Affairs, a senior advisor, as well as the Deputy Chief of Staff. I'm sure we'll get into some of the conversation about her time there. She does have a Tucson connection, but at this time I want to bring in Katie Ratliff to join the conversation. So, Katie, I hope you've got me loud and clear.
I do, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Well, I really appreciate you joining us today. As I've told you, and as most of the listeners to this show know, that our big focus is trying to get people involved and engaged, and to say that you've been engaged is an absolute spot-on conversation. I'm looking forward to you sharing your story, and I like to start that by actually sharing the story of how you got where you are and what, more importantly, got you engaged in this public service of being involved in both the political side of it and now the research and the advocacy and issue side of it. So Katie, if you could tell us a little bit about life growing up and then how you came to Tucson and what you did after that.
Of course. Well, Ted, as you point out, all good stories start in Tucson, and that is certainly the case for me. I grew up in Phoenix, but I went down to Tucson at the University of Arizona for college, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, like many young people. I knew I had kind of an interest in politics, an interest in economics. I majored in both political science and economics. But it wasn't until I took a class at the University of Arizona on presidential campaigns, actually. It was 2008. It was a really interesting time to be studying presidential campaigns because Barack Obama was kind of changing everything we knew about the way campaigns were run. His outreach to young people, the way he was connecting with voters, was totally different than anything anyone had ever seen before. And of course, we had, you know, a national hero and Arizona's favorite son, John McCain, on the ballot as well. So I just kind of took the class because I was like, this is an interesting time. I want to know more. I want to understand more. And it just so happened that the course was taught by a guy named Dr. Hank Kensky, who I know you recognize that name, Ted, also happened to work for U.S. Senator John Kyle. And at the end of that class, he offered me an internship in Senator Kyle's office. And I wasn't really sure, I didn't know a lot about what U.S. senators did outside of Washington, D.C. I didn't know much about what happened in their district offices, in Senator Kyle's Tucson office. And so I got the opportunity to work in Senator Kyle's Tucson office, and it changed my life, really. I mean, I caught the bug. I had the opportunity to see, you know, Senator Kyle's policymaking process, which is incredibly diligent, incredibly deliberate, and the work that the local constituent services folks do is totally nonpartisan. It's totally about reaching out and helping people and connecting them with the right programs, and it was just really inspiring and exciting to me to get to see that. Senator Kyle was also very data-driven, which helped influence the trajectory of my career and the way that I would approach policymaking and the kinds of people I wanted to work for. So that was kind of it for me. After that, I went off to Washington, D.C., had the opportunity to work out there for a little while, came back to Tucson for law school, and still knew I wanted to work in politics, but wasn't really sure. I thought at that point I wanted to go back to Washington, D.C., but luckily for me, I got some exposure to local policymaking, to what happened at the state legislature. And that was really exciting for me because, you know, things in Washington, D.C. are exciting, but as you know, probably better than anyone, Ted, they move really slow and not a lot of things get done. At the state level, couldn't be more different. You know, it's an incredibly approachable environment. Things move really fast. You have to do a budget every year. You don't get to do continuing resolutions. You have to come together, come up with a solution, and move that forward for the state. So got the opportunity to work for the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, really cut my teeth on state-based public policy and, you know, what that was about, how that worked, got to know the state legislature better. And then, as you mentioned, ultimately had the opportunity to work for Governor Doug Ducey, which was also just a monumental opportunity to see Governor Ducey approach policymaking and, you know, really running the state, which is what the governor does, from a CEO's perspective with a business mindset, with, you know, the mindset of we are here to serve all Arizonans, no excuses, we're going to get things done, no matter the political environment, no matter the legislative environment. Was really an incredible experience and influenced my desire to be doing what I'm doing today, which is, you know, looking at data-based policymaking. How can we inform policymakers, give them the facts and the data so that they can make good decisions?
Well, you absolutely hit it on the head with the fact that the state and even local governments has so much more impact on our daily lives. Not only does the state have to have a budget every year, it's supposed to be balanced. So there's actually decisions makings of what you want and what you don't want. And sometimes during election season now, we get overwhelmed with the national figures and even the federal figures. But I think what you brought up about the state having the impact on our communities and our lives so much more is so important. And people forget that at times.
No, you're absolutely right. I think there has been a real movement over the last few election cycles to kind of nationalize every issue. You know, there's always been much more of a focus on presidential races, the, you know, Senate and congressional races. There's a lot more money spent in those, and so you're inundated with a lot more messaging. But the truth is, when you walk outside your door in the morning, the decisions that are made at City Hall and, you know, down at the state legislature are going to impact you long before any decisions made at the federal level will. And so it's really important to, you know, stay engaged in those as well and to know about what's happening at your, you know, City Hall, what your city council is doing, what the state legislature is doing, because it can have an enormous impact on your day-to-day life. And also, you know, our focus at the Common Sense Institute is on the economy. The policies that are adopted at the state level can have an extraordinary impact on the economic prosperity of a state, even against national trends. Even when there is a national slowdown economically, states can ensure that they are continuing to grow with the right policy decisions.
And Katie, that's, we're going to take a break, I think, at this point. But I want, when we come back, I want to talk both about the Common Sense Institute, how you got engaged, how you got involved. Because it's not just Common Sense Institute Arizona. It's an organization that I think's got the potential to show up in many more states than just Arizona. So I appreciate that. And I look forward to you staying with us for the next half hour. And we'll get more into both the organization and the research that you've done thus far. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This is the Engagement Hour. Please stay around through the bottom of the hour, and we'll see you on the other side. Welcome back. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Engagement Hour. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, and with me today, my guest is Katie Ratliff with the Common Sense Institute Arizona. So, Katie, we spent the first time talking about kind of the importance of state and local government and about being engaged with facts and figures. But let's talk about the Common Sense Institute a little bit. Can you kind of give the listeners an idea of how and where it began and then how it came to Arizona?
Of course, yeah. And, you know, it's a perfect lead-in, Ted, because the way the Common Sense Institute was originally founded, which was in Colorado, was a group of business leaders in Denver who were just totally frustrated with the trajectory of the political and policy conversation in their state. They felt totally devoid of facts, totally unfocused on the things that matter to voters and to the constituents, which is jobs, the economy, opportunity. You know, are we a growing state or a dying state? And so back in 2010, they founded what they called at the time the Common Sense Policy Roundtable. And their idea was, you know, let's found an organization that is totally nonpartisan, that is not going to engage in advocacy or elections, so just focused on facts and data, and that can do what's called dynamic economic modeling, which is kind of a unique economic way of looking at public policy, which allows you to look at the dynamic impact on jobs over time. So, for example, a tax increase may have the static effect or effect in a vacuum of increasing revenues. You know, higher taxes, you're going to get more revenue. But when you look at it dynamically, which is what we're able to do, it may kill jobs. It may encourage people to purchase goods elsewhere outside of that jurisdiction that's raising taxes. It may, you know, cause people to move. And over time, it may actually cause a decrease in revenue. But you have to have a pretty sophisticated economic modeling, and you have to have pretty well-educated economists to be able to do that and to model that out accurately and appropriately. And so their idea was, you know, let's invest in economists and economic modeling that can do this dynamically, that can educate policymakers, elected officials, on what the dynamic impact is of public policy, and very specifically, what is the impact on the economy, jobs, and the individual's pocketbook. So they've been operating in Colorado now for about 14 years, and they've had incredible success. You know, elected officials on both sides of the aisle seek them out, want to understand, you know, what they're seeing, what they're reading in the data, the facts and the modeling that they're able to do. So a few years ago, they realized, hey, there are other states that could benefit from this kind of analysis. There are other states that are facing the same kinds of issues that Colorado is, you know, trying to drive growth, trying to diversify their economy. And so they looked to expand the Common Sense Institute into other states. Arizona was the first state that they chose to expand the organization into. We used to look a lot like Colorado politically. Colorado's gone kind of one direction, and we're still, I think, an evolving political state. But we also have, you know, similarly sized populations, similar kind of business community. And so Arizona made a lot of sense to be the first state where they expanded.
So how did you get interested? How did they find you?
Yeah. Great question. So I was still working for Governor Ducey at the time. You know, the thing about the Ducey administration is we never, ever, ever slowed down. And so there were a lot of really big policy changes that were made in that final year and implemented. So it was really important to me to stay through the end. So I wasn't even really thinking about, you know, what's next for me. I was thinking about how do we finish strong? How do we, you know, implement these policies well and ensure that they continue. But I found out about the Common Sense Institute, their expansion into Arizona, and it just fit so perfectly with what I wanted to do next, which was ensure that, you know, all of these policies that had fundamentally changed the state and the state's economic future. You know, you look at the Great Recession, Ted, you remember, we were hit harder than almost any other state. We recovered a little more slowly than just about any other state. But since then, over the last 10 years, the state of Arizona has been transformed. So much more resilient, so much more diversified. The state budget went from $1 billion deficit to a $5 billion surplus. I mean, just extraordinary things. So it was important to me to go somewhere where I could help continue to educate policymakers and the public on why that stuff is important. So when I learned about the Common Sense Institute, it was an obvious choice for me. You know, this is exactly what I was looking to do next, exactly the kind of thing that energizes me and is exciting to me. And so I joined, you know, I ended the Ducey administration on December 31st, started this job, you know, January 2nd. So it was the perfect transition for me personally and professionally.
Well, I know I appreciate having you on as executive director up there. For full disclosure, I am on the board. I was honored to ask to take Jim Colby's seat as the only Southern Arizona representative on the Common Sense Institute Arizona's board upon his passing. But that doesn't mean that with only one seat up there, there's not a lot of these issues that impact Southern Arizona. So the thing that's always amazed me is you've got some incredibly talented researchers. Glenn Farley, I mean, you listen to him talk and you know he knows exactly the details. And the level of the research they do is amazing. But I'm also been surprised by the quantity. Can you kind of talk about how you pick things to research, how you go about it, and kind of give people a sense of, you know, in 2 years, how much research you've been able to put out as an organization?
Yeah, so to your point, Ted, we're on track to do 50 reports this year, which is about one a week. And they really run the gamut. We look at any issue that we think could slow Arizona's economic progress down. So it's everything from, you know, taxes, regulation, the state budget, to things like public safety, homelessness, school choice, things that really impact where people want to live, where they want to, you know, run their businesses, and how they feel about whether or not the state is supporting them in doing that. You know, if you don't feel safe, if you don't feel like your community has options for your kid, you know, if your neighbors are living on the street and participating in open air drug use, you're not going to feel great about your community. And so we've really broadened our policy scope to include any issue that could impact the state's economic growth. But you're absolutely right, Ted. We have an incredible board, yourself included, but people who come from the business community, who are community leaders, who really care about these issues. And our focus is always on what does the data say, what are the facts, and ultimately, what is the impact on the state's economy, the state's budget, and individual prosperity and opportunity? Because that's what really matters at the end of the day. That's why we're making public policy in the first place.
If you're interested in getting more information or taking a look at the research they've got, you can find that on www.commonsenseinstituteus.org. And if you want to go straight to Arizona, you can go /Arizona. But otherwise, you just will go to the organization's website, and then you'll find Arizona from there. And you can find all their reports, all their studies. We're going to cut to a break a little early here because, Katie, what I want to do when we come back, I'm going to let you guide the discussion on what direction you want to go. So when we get back from the break, have a couple of the different reports that you've got in mind that you think Southern Arizona will be interested in, and we can talk about what the future holds for CSI as well. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Please tune in tomorrow at 9 o'clock after Wake Up Tucson, and you'll hear the voice of Grant Kruger and his enthusiasm on Jump in Tucson as he interviews Rob Elias, the president CEO of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. My guest today is Katie Ratliff, the executive director of the Common Sense Institute. On their website, you'll find the first line saying our focus is on the facts. So let's get to some of those. Katie, I think you wanted to start with the migration report, which is new and out today for the first time. So can you give us some insight on what that's telling you?
Yeah, Ted, hot off the presses. This is our latest report out today. And, you know, we've been talking a lot this morning about how policy matters. It can attract migration, economic growth, et cetera. And this report really provides the data to support that thesis. So we're looking at migration numbers from 2023, so from last year, looking at where people moved and where they moved from. So Arizona ranked fifth last year in net domestic migration. That means out of all the states in the country, more people moved here than just about any other state. We were the one of the top five states in terms of where people were moving. Where do they come from? Primarily California. And so that continues to reinforce this idea that good policy attracts good jobs, attracts more people. And one of the interesting things I thought from the report was that income of people who are moving into Arizona is higher than people who are leaving Arizona. So on the net, we are attracting higher income individuals to our state, and we're losing people who are moving out of the state make less than those who are moving in. I think that's really interesting in terms of, you know, telling the story of our economic transformation. But I also think it's something to keep an eye on because it could indicate some of the issues that we're having that are a positive externality or a consequence of growth, which is things like housing prices are going up. You know, we have been one of the states that has been most impacted by inflation. And so it is becoming less and less affordable to live in Arizona. That is something I think policymakers need to keep a really close eye on and pay attention to. And I think that is supported by the fact that people who are moving here have higher incomes than people who are leaving. It's a good thing. You know, it means that that'll help our state budget, that'll help our state's overall prosperity. But it's certainly something that I would encourage policymakers to keep an eye on because it could also signal that affordability of our state is suffering. And that's been, you know, one of the really critical pillars, I think, of the attraction to Arizona is we have great climate, great quality of life. It's relatively affordable here. But it's something that we need to continue to fight for and to ensure remains. So that's from our report out today. Generally, people are moving here, as I said, from California, but also from states like Florida and Texas, which is really interesting to us. And of course, Oregon and Washington, which I think just further reinforces, you know, policies of high tax, high regulation tend to drive people and jobs out of your state. Policies of low tax, low regulation tend to attract people to your state.
Yeah, it's kind
so that's
of,
just an example.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because Florida is number one in migration. Most people move in there, but they're also number one in out migration. Same, California's three and in and also an out. So some of it's a population driven thing. But I think the importance of taking a look at this report is to realize it's not just Californians that are coming in. Yes, that's one of our largest, that's our largest sector because it's one of the largest populations in the state, but we attract people from all throughout the state because of our economic opportunities here, because of our tax policies, because of some of the other issues. Both folks still working and retirees are attracted to the state of Arizona.
So that's exactly right.
So at this time I'm going to throw a curveball on you and I want to jump to the fentanyl. We've still got about, four more minutes to cover some issues, and you've recently put out a couple different research or programs on fentanyl. Can you talk to us what your big takeaways and the facts that came out of those research studies were?
Yeah, so the critical thing about the fentanyl report is we looked at the economic impact to the state, and the fentanyl crisis is costing our state about $50 billion every year, which is, you know, the result of law enforcement costs, certainly, but it's also the result of opioid use disorder costs and the result of the number of people that we lose every year to fentanyl overdose. It's incredibly tragic. It's a, you know, it's a human crisis. It's a healthcare crisis. It's a law enforcement crisis. But the interesting takeaway from that report, Ted, is, you know, number one, it has an impact on everyone in the state because many people know someone who's been directed, you know, directly affected by the crisis, but it's impacting our economy overall. So even if you don't know someone who's personally been impacted, it's affecting the productivity and the economic output for all Arizonans. But the other interesting takeaway from that report is if you look at the data, I think everyone knows that this is a border crisis, a border issue. But when migration numbers go up, when Border Patrol is intercepting more and more migrants at the border, drug interdiction goes down, and it almost perfectly correlates. So I think it's just a reminder that resources at the border are finite, and if they're being pulled to deal with one crisis, like a migration crisis, they're not able to deal with the drug crisis. And so that, I think, is really important for takeaway for policymakers and something for them to strongly consider as they look at how they slow down the impact of the fentanyl crisis in our state.
Well, I can tell you, Katie, I'm going to need to be bringing you back on a more regular basis now that we've told your stories and exposed it to the leaders. We're going to be coming back and talking about a lot of this. So we've got about a minute 50 left, and I don't want to not talk about the Southern Arizona Fellow Program and what the reports that you've got up online that have been accomplished under that fellowship, at least, and it's the Jim Colby Fellowship. So please give us a little information on that, and I will probably try to give you about a 20-second warning before we get cut off.
Sounds good. Well, as you mentioned, Ted, Jim Colby was on our founding board of directors, and after he passed, it was important to us to honor him, to remind people of his legacy, of, you know, working in a bipartisan way to address the issues that mattered most to his district in Southern Arizona. So we established the Jim Colby Free Enterprise Fellowship. Our first inaugural Jim Colby Fellow is Julie Katzel, who works at the University of Arizona. And she said, hey, look, we have a homelessness issue in Tucson, and we really need to be looking at solutions. So we put out a report earlier in the year looking at the amount of money and the data around homelessness. So Arizona spends $1 billion a year to address the issue, and it really hasn't been getting better despite that investment. But the really interesting thing was Pima County had a disproportionately higher rate of unsheltered homeless individuals than any other part of the state. So Julie started convening, you know, community leaders, staff of the county and the city, and said, hey, what could work? Like, how can we address this? And she just put out a paper that I would encourage all of your listeners to go and read, because it's so fantastic, on the solutions that are scalable.
Absolutely.
So that's just an example.
Absolutely, Katie. We've got 10 seconds. I appreciate you being on today. We will have you back. CommonSenseInstitute.us.org. Thank you for listening today to Jump in Tucson. See you next week.